Today, Westpac wilts under scrutiny. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. I have Robbie Barwick with me for a very important update. Hi, Robbie.
Hi, Martin. Definition of breaking news.
It is pretty interesting, isn't it? So under all the pressure relating to regional branch closures, Westpac has, well, wilted.
They have. So next week on Wednesday, today's Monday, on Wednesday next week, there is a hearing scheduled for Cloncurry in central Queensland. And then the next day, there's a hearing scheduled for Ingham, which is about 10 hours drive away from a bit north of Townsville. And I've actually booked my flights to go to both hearings. And both
that's
those
a long journey.
A long journey, yeah. I'm flying to Melbourne to Brisbane to Mount Isa, driving out to Cloncurry, back again, fly to Townsville, up to Ingham. Both of those towns were picked, though, because that's where Westpac had announced it's closing its branches. Mm. So that's next week. Today, Westpac has announced that it has scrapped its plans permanently to close those branches. It is keeping them open permanently.
Yep.
Now, this is great news. It's excellent news. But I have to say, it's also damn infuriating news. Because just because they want good PR, just because they're feeling the heat of a public inquiry, it's so easy for them to reverse a decision which all the other towns that they've closed their branches, it has a devastating impact on. But in order to try and give themselves some good publicity, hopefully, they're able to reverse the decision just like that. And anyway, that's life. It shows you that we fought really hard to get this inquiry up, and it's already bearing fruit. It's excellent.
Yeah, and it is interesting, isn't it, how the force of public scrutiny can, you know, make things happen in the right direction. Of course, not always. CBA, for example, is playing two ends to the middle in terms of definitions of what a regional branch actually is. So they're still closing ones that actually, on many definitions, will be in regional areas. But the, you know, the voltage is really turning up here, and you know, it is becoming a very critical issue. And I think we should just contextualize this again by saying this isn't just about individual branches, but it is actually about the structure of banking, access to cash, you know, the economic momentum in the regional areas. All of those things are on the table, and we've got more than 500 submissions to the inquiry. So the Senate has a tiger by the tail.
They certainly do. This is a huge inquiry. There was a big first inquiry into regional bank closures in Australia back in 1999. That got 117 submissions, and that was a big inquiry. This the publishing shows they've received over 500. I think it's going to get close to 1,000 by the time they tally them all up. This is a huge inquiry. Everybody knows that. The senators do have a tiger by the tail. The number of submissions flies in the face of the bank's propaganda, which they repeated in an interview in the Fin Review a couple of weeks ago, which was about, they were bragging. Westpac was one of them, saying, oh, we're going to push these towns to go cashless. That's what it said. They were bragging about their cashless agenda. And then one of the bankers added, oh, yeah, but we're actually lagging behind the customers. It's the customers that are dragging in this direction. They want to go there. And that's been their narrative, which has gone unchallenged, essentially, except from a small pocket, us, until this inquiry got up. Now that it's got up and 500 plus institutions and individuals around Australia have engaged with the inquiry, that tells you what's out there. Our friend of the show, Jason Bryce from the Cash Welcome campaign, he's got a change.org petition that is now up to more than 110,000 signers calling for a cash and banking guarantee so that every business is required to accept cash and the government guarantees banking services, face-to-face banking services for every community. That's got enormous, by Australian standards, that's a big change.org petition, getting that much support, right? That's the real feeling out there. And the banks have been able to just ignore that. Well, they can't ignore it any longer. And I have a message for the senators on the committee. They should take stock of the fact they got real power, right? The banks would like to ignore this inquiry. Their instinct is to tread water until it's completed and carry on regardless. Westpac is starting to get the message. The others are still having a hard time wrapping their head around it, which is why NAB is forging ahead with just shutting branch. Like they're putting all these towns on notice that they're going to be shutting their branches soon because they're reducing hours at those branches. And we put out that report a couple of weeks ago identifying, from Dale Webster's work, 64 towns where NAB had reduced the hours of the banks. We said, look, this is the pre-tremor of the earthquake that's going to hit you when they shut the branch, because this is always the first sign. Well, that's already come true for Biggenden in Queensland. In fact, I remember a couple of weeks ago, I called the mayor of that council that covers Biggenden. Biggenden's down the road from my hometown at Gilders. I called the mayor and I said, you should know that because they've reduced hours, they're going to they could shut the branch. And he took it seriously straight away because they'd done that in Monto and he knew that was a precursor. Well, now it's already happened in Biggenden, right? And NAB is just stomping around the country, squashing branch after branch after branch. And Commonwealth has, as you said, they're trying to play both sides. What Commonwealth has done is the branch at Narang in Queensland, which is on the Gold Coast, they have shut it, even though they took the most credit as the bank that complied with the request of the inquiry not to shut branches. And they said, oh, yeah, straight away. Oh, yeah, we'll comply with that, no worries. So then they go and shut this branch. And their excuse was, well, that's not a regional branch, because it's the regional banking inquiry that asked them to stop closing regional branches. And they said, yeah, we're complying. That's not a regional branch. Except, they're splitting hairs, right? They've looked for a technicality. But Dale Webster has found, by their own literature, CBA's own literature, promotes the Gold Coast region as regional Australia. In their own literature, not big city metropolitan, it's regional Australia. Yet what they're doing is they're regarding it as regional when it suits them as a promotional thing. Oh, look, we're supporting regional Australia. And when it doesn't suit them, suddenly Narang's not regional Australia. And this is the nature of the banks. They're always, you know, you give them a yard and they'll take a mile. They're always looking for those sort of ways out. But Westpac is doing this because it is the one bank that's feeling the heat the most. Mm-hmm. Westpac shut Coober Pedy, and that got a lot of publicity. Westpac shut Carnarma in Western Australia, where I hope they're going to get a hearing. That got a lot of publicity. Westpac was dragged before the first hearing that was held at Sale in Victoria on the 2nd of March. And I was there, and there was also a NAB executives there. But I tell you what, I could tell the difference in the body language between the Westpac execs and the NAB execs. The Westpac execs actually sound embarrassed that they were being forced to say out loud to the public in the communities that they were impacting what sounded so good to them in the safety of their boardrooms, right? And they looked embarrassed and they looked uncomfortable. The NAB people, they had ice in their veins, mate. They just didn't care, right? This is what we're doing. But Westpac was already showing signs then. Now they've made this decision. So what does the inquiry have to do? I think they need to threaten to hold a hearing in every damn town in Australia where there's a bank closure. That's what I think they need to do, and actually take the fight up to these banks here, because it is really good news, but Westpac has actually given something away, that this is an easy decision to reverse because it's not costing them money. They're profitable branches, and all the stuff they carry on with is rubbish. And given that they've shown that, don't pat them on the back, go harder after them.
Well, that's right. And it's just worth underscoring, I think, three quick points. The first is that economically, we know that a lot of these branches, if you did the accounting correctly, would be highly profitable. In fact, they'd be prized. Yep. But it's an ideological battle on the part of the banks that they just want to get rid of branches and force everybody into the digital world. Second point, of course, is in regional areas, the digital just doesn't work very well. And who's paying for the digital infrastructure to replace branches? It ain't the banks. So that's, you know, stupid. Third, of course, is the current solution, well, everybody can go to Australia Post, is not fit for purpose because so many of the services that are available in a branch won't be available in the current mode of operation of Australia Post. It's just not feasible. But it does leave the door open to the, you know, the clear solution of an alternative, a government-backed alternative, which basically comes in and really becomes a major competitor to the commercial banks, who clearly aren't interested in doing what's right for customers or Australians. All they're interested in doing is servicing their shareholders. And by the way, many of those shareholders are overseas, offshore, and don't care about what happens locally in our own economy. So, you know, this is a really critical issue. It's a major battle, and it's an ideological battle for the future of Australia and Australians.
Yep. A lot of the submissions, we've been going through them, a lot of the submissions actually did call, like a lot of it submissions from the individuals that we've encouraged to make submissions, definitely called for a postal bank. Yep. But I noticed a lot of the institutional submissions, especially from local councils, called for a government-financed banking solution, which is what we propose as a postal bank, right? Our submission made the point, Martin, that it kills two birds. You know, it is win-win because what does it do? It guarantees banking services for every community, full banking services, but it also helps support the Australia Post network, which is the biggest retail network in Australia. There's 4,300 Australia Post outlets there. If we set up a postal bank, which is a separate Australian Postal Bank Corporation or a Commonwealth Postal Bank Savings Bank Corporation that has an agency agreement with Australia Post, that instantly becomes the biggest branch bank in Australia because those 4,300 Australia Post outlets are more than all private bank branches combined now. There's only 4,000 private bank branches in Australia. So that is more than that, right? Straight away. And that will, what that will do, the other part of the, it's win-win-win, because what that does is straight away sends a message to every bank in Australia, because it's not just the big four now, Bendigo is also closing branches. It sends a message to all those banks, if you want to keep persisting in shutting profitable branches because you think you can force your customers to go online and become their own tellers, but expose them to all the risks and inconveniences thereof, just so you can cut, save costs on branches and staff and maximize your profits. Well, think again, because there's going to be a bank outlet in town which they can leave your bank and go to. And that kind of competitive pressure, I think, will make them take stock and go, like, you know, if Westpac has wilted under this amount of scrutiny so far, right? Wait until they're having to compete with a public bank. And then it's they will compete. And if they do compete, they'll probably do okay, frankly, right? We had 84 years of a public bank, the Commonwealth Bank, competing with the private banks in Australia. And those private banks did fine having to compete, but they did have to provide services as a result of having that bank, right, to compete with, which was there to provide services. They can go back to that kind of model and get rid of this model which they've adopted, which is all about just exploiting customers for their benefit, you know, and become the only business in Australia that in which the customer's not always right, you know, and they think, well, we're gonna force you we're gonna socially engineer you to engage with us the way we want, not the way that suits you, and all the risk thereof. By the way, Martin, I know you're in the UK now. They're running the latest series of ads on Australian television is effectively Australian Banking Association warning ads about financial scams. They wouldn't be these scams wouldn't be the problem of the scale of which they are if it wasn't for the banks forcing people, pushing the online thing as much as possible so that the unsophisticated, and there's a lot of unsophisticated out there, the unsophisticated are more and more forced into the online space where they are suckers because these are sophisticated scams and they are vulnerable to that. if the banks hadn't have created the problem in the first place. Another example of the banks creating the problem and then thinking they're the solution is the this Westpac comment at the to the Financial Review, because Westpac actually said we want to have cashless towns in Australia, and they put that up as a solution. That was their solution to the security risks of country towns having to hold large amounts of cash from things like the country races, etc., like some field day or an event where suddenly the town's full of large amounts of cash. And Westpac says that's a security risk. The way to solve that security risk is to have totally cashless events, a totally cashless town. Hang on. You created that security risk by taking away the bank with the vault, where otherwise they used to be able to go and take that cash and deposit it safely. You created that security risk, right? So their solution has replaced one security risk they created with another one, which is all the security risks of online banking. And there is no good spin they can put on this. And all we needed to do to start getting a proper discussion in this area was get up this inquiry, which we did. We achieved that in February. And I think people, I like when we have these good news events, where we see progress, because, yeah, people have participated through your channel, et cetera, in this process. Pat yourself on the back. But understand, this is why we keep doing this. Mm. The public needs to stay engaged in the political process, right? Don't be cynical and say, oh, yeah, you know, all the decisions that politicians and banks are making, they're all bastards, et cetera. You know, what are you going to do? Well, you know, if you don't do anything, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Identify the problem, identify the serious problems, identify the solution, and get engaged and make it happen. And now that process is unfolding, and it's really, really good. And we have to keep the heat on, right? Make it better. And we've got the rest of the year to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, you know, the Senate, of course, it's a cross-party committee, and more of them, I think, are getting engaged because they can see that this is a real critical issue, particularly in the region areas, and of course, closer into the centres of towns as well, because so many areas are being hit by this. But the other interesting observation, Robert, just thinking about, the government alternative, be it a postal bank or whatever, is, well, they could then start actually seeking deposits, right? And I suspect that many, many people would be much more comfortable putting their deposits into a government-backed institution rather than actually the commercial banks, you know, risk of bail and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And then, of course, that gives you a pool of funds that can be used then for the public good in terms of infrastructure investment and things like that. So not only does this solve the immediate issue with regard to access to banking services and also, you know, dealing with the cash issue and all those things, but it actually provides a platform then for a revolution in terms of actually the way that investment is made in Australia.
Yes, including pretty basic lending back into the same communities that the banks serve, which if you read Robbie Katter, the Queensland State MP's submission to this inquiry, he described in detail what it's like out there in outback Queensland. You've got to have like 45% deposit to even think about applying for a loan to buy a house in that area. The banks are just not interested. And then if they make the bar that you've got to reach so high, because they don't want to lend out there, right? And what that does is it denies those local economies the lifeblood of that kind of lending. This bank will revolutionize that, right? Yep. It will attract a lot of deposits, and that can be lent into those areas, and that will fuel the economic development of those areas. It can be lent for, like you said, infrastructure projects. This really is win-win. Anyway, I've identified 7 wins, I know, in our list of things that this will do, right? Win-win-win-win-win-win-win-win. The only loser is the private banks. But it won't destroy them. It'll just make them lift their game. One other related issue, Martin, of course, is what we're talking about is a public bank, and the public bank is based on the premise that the government has not just a right to be involved in the banking space, I would say a duty, because if it's completely private and there's no government involvement, then it's private bank boards have a monopoly on credit decisions. And what they do, because they're accountable to shareholders, is they make those decisions on the basis of their maximum profit. right? And that that's why Australia has a property bubble in the major cities, because that's where all the lending's gone, and it's denied these other areas. Government needs to control this power so that they can make sure it's used for the public good, because the power of credit is enormous power. And the last time you and I spoke, we spoke about this RBA decision, the RBA review, which said that the authority of the government to tell the RBA what to do must be scrapped. Of 51 recommendations, I said scrap that, because the people who came up with that decision have the opposite ideology. They do not believe that government should have any say in banking whatsoever. Banks tell governments what to do. Governments don't tell banks what to do. That is their ideology. I can guarantee it. That is their ideology. And a great British prime minister said so in the 19th century, William Gladstone, when he set up the world's first postal bank as a public bank. And he had to fight the private banks in the city of London. He later described what it was like. And he said, the hinge of the whole situation was this. The government was not to be a player in matters of finance, but the money power was to remain supreme and unquestioned. That was in his memoirs, right? The money power must remain supreme and unquestioned. And what that's been the history of banking, right? So this is this group that came up with this recommendation of trying to get that that power that Ben Chifley and John Curtin got into law scrap. And we've just made a video about this. In fact, I can send you the link. We can put it in the comments below. But the other thing we've done is put out a link to a release today. Parliament sits tomorrow for the budget sitting. We're asking the people who are aware of this issue and share our concern that the government must not give up the power of democratic accountability over the banking system, to call the Treasurer Jim Chalmers, the Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor, and your local Member of Parliament, and demand that they do not go along with this. Do not give up the power that gives the Treasurer the right to overrule the decisions of the RBA. That power represents democratic accountability. You scrap that, the banks and the banking system has no democratic accountability whatsoever, right? Do not give up that power. So if you support that, that's a sub-campaign, if you're all that we're launching right now. And I'll give you the link, but we explain how it's based on keeping alive the legacy of Curtin and Chifley. They fought literally to the death for this. John Curtin died in office. Now, the main thing that killed him was fighting World War II. But his whole political career was about taking on the private banks and saying, no, you are accountable to the people, right? And then Ben Chifley actually enshrined this power in law. And then when the banks tried to find ways to undermine what he did in law, that's when at a certain point he said, well, if you're going to keep trying to undermine this principle of democratic accountability, I'm going to nationalize you. That wasn't his first choice, but that's what he felt he was forced into. And that campaign effectively killed him, right? It was that fight that, you know, he died in 1950, having taken on that fight, which he lost on, you know, at the time. Two of the two greatest prime ministers in Australian history. And that's what Labor's about to trash, right? So we're fighting to keep it alive, keep that principle of democratic accountability of the banking system alive. And if you support that, help us by making three calls this week to Parliament. We can put the links below. Please make those calls. And like with what we've just been talking about with the impact the inquiry's had on Westpac, understand that this process works. We're just, every time we see an opportunity and a need, we tell people, here's the way to get engaged. And that's how the voice of the people actively gets engaged and makes a difference. So please do that.
Yes, it's democracy in action, Robbie, isn't it? And the point is that democracy is those who turn up and make a fuss and, you know, drive it. And we've had many successes in the past, the cash ban, et cetera. And, you know, it works. This whole process, although it's painful and, you know, difficult to do, it can make a huge, huge difference. And you can steer so many things in a better direction for the benefit of individuals, businesses, and frankly, the country.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks, right, Robbie. Well, great to catch up. People. Great to Thanks, share Martin. The news. Yep, and we'll keep on fighting. I should get you on my live show in a couple of weeks, and we can have a follow up.
Definitely, just not next week because I'll be in Cloncurry.
Yeah, a couple of weeks time. Okay. Once those inquiries are through, let's do that, and then you can give us a debrief and talk about, you know, next steps.
Absolutely, that'd be great.
Great. Thanks Robbie. See you later. Bye.